Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your hosts today are me, Tegan Villaney, Managing Consultant, and Tim Meredith, Business Manager at Newco. And we are delighted to be joined by Amelia Casper, the Chief Operating Officer at 3SS. As a child, Amelia loved books and always has had dreams of writing herself. However, Amelia began her career as an engineer as one of only a few women on her course. She moved from engineering into project management before taking on the role of delivery director and COO. Being highly ambitious, Amelia now leads the delivery unit for 3SS and is really passionate about using her commercial communicative skills with her technical background to provide outstanding services for her customers. She is a transparent, transformational leader who is also mother of two children and lives in a town which is shared by the neighbouring population of bears. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Thanks for the introduction. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And to get us started, we would love to know, how did you first get into the content and media industry?
Yeah, that's a bit of an interesting story. It really was by coincidence. Could have been anything else to do with software development and technology in general, because I studied electrical engineer. And when I was a student, I had this idea that I need a car and my parents would not pay for it. So like the only other option was to get a job. So one of my professors at the university was working for a software company and, you know, like being bored, I asked, so can I get a job there? Is it well paid? I need a car. And went for an interview, got the job as a junior developer, but actually I was doing, you know, really basic stuff in the beginning. And the company was doing several projects in the area of entertainment, video and content distribution for hospitality, but as well as for end consumers. And it was just great being there between all these super smart engineers, right? And some of them were teaching at university. I found it kind of a dynamic industry. And so far I saw no reason to change. I changed companies obviously several times, but the industry remained the same. So yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's I love that, from wanting a car to heading up delivery for 3SS. Incredible. Tim, I'm going to pass over to you now.
Yes. So we do like to talk about the past and sort of how you came up through the industry. And a lot of people early on have mentors or people they look up to. So who would you say has been the kind of biggest influence on your career so far?
Well, I mean, a lot of people also at work, but I would say that probably the biggest influence is my husband. We met quite early, and he works in the same industry. And I think one of, you know, the benefits of having your partner sharing the same work environment is really the possibility of bouncing ideas, sharing ideas, discussing different challenges. And for me, all these things and communication with him and discussions was really, I found inspiration. And always I had, okay, after such a debate with him, I had a clue how to move forward by having, you know, just some ideas. And he's always positive, you know, the first one to try new things. He likes devices, technology, gadgets. And this also influenced me to be a bit more open and take, you know, every opportunity and every situation like something to learn or try new things and look in general at the positive from every situation. Because I have to say, now I'm slightly different, but in the beginning, a few years back, I was very skeptical, you know, coming also from this Eastern European part, so to say. We are slightly different in a way, and so for me he was definitely the biggest influence.
I suppose sometimes so nice to be able
to... I have to say also, it's like, I wish that, you know, I would be together with a doctor and then not talk about technology and leadership. But well, it is how it is, and it's great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose nice to have somebody you can have, you know, a very frank conversation around that stuff, and you don't have to worry about how you come across, because yes, after so many years of marriage, there's no hiding anymore, so why bother? You could just say, look, this is what I think.
Yeah, exactly.
So we know you have from your background that you have been involved in sort of the IPTV and IP video space from pretty early in your career, so you've kind of seen quite a big span of it. So what have you seen change in the IP space, and sort of how do you think that the introduction of IP video into this space has kind of impacted and transformed the industry?
Well, it was quite an impact, right? But when I started working, TV was all about cable and terrestrial distribution, you know, and IPTV was rather new, was already around, but new, and was more like the add-on. Yeah? And I think by now live streams VIP is really the norm. And I also changed and influenced the consumer behavior. In the past, people were consuming live TV channels, and now I think that has definitely changed, and people are not watching a specific channel anymore, but rather only shows, if at all, right? But, or more like a catch-up or a recording. And definitely was a big influence. Another aspect is probably the scalability and the possibility of decentralized distribution. And this, I think, also had a big impact on how we know Web 2.0 as we know it today, right? And it opened up a multitude of production and content spreading possibilities. Everybody is in a way a content creator, or can be, and distributed on the fly, right? So in the last 10 years, 15, I think this has really changed completely.
Yeah, I suppose it's so low, in a way, sort of lowered the kind of technological bar into getting into this space. It's not like you need to be, you know, one of the three major channels that's got a you know, an agreement with the FCC to broadcast every, so, you know, you can be at home and go, right, I'm going to stream now. I'm a little content creator in the IP video space. It sort of opened things up in an enormous amount.
Right.
Yeah. And sort of looking at sort of you more personally, in your career so far, what achievement would you say you're most proud of?
At RSS, I spent most of my career, right? I'm here since 11 years or more, actually. So all my career highlights happen in this time. And I think the one giving me really the most pride is the fact that I contributed to the growth of the company from 30 people. It was that much that big when I first joined it, to where we are today, right? I think very soon we will hit the 300 people milestone. It's not only growing the company, but doing so in, by keeping an eye on the company culture, having a healthy company culture, right? And having that, keeping that mindset of a startup in mind, and be still trying to be flexible and agile, and at the core of how we operate daily. I'm a big fan of lean and agile methodologies, and I'm really proud that I introduced that when I first came at RSS. And we managed to keep this in the 3SS culture while growing and getting to be, I hope, a respectful, respected company now, right? And I believe that many companies compromise sometimes the benefits of having this small or startup team and mindset in detriment of growth, right? But it's my belief that there is a balance to handle. And I think at RSS, together with my colleagues, of course, we managed to find and evolve this balance and evolve the company under this umbrella, yeah.
Perfect. Oh, that's lovely to hear about. And such sort of a nice kind of like long-term rolling thing for you, because, you know, you've grown with the company, you've seen what you've done, but you know, that is still an ongoing thing. You know, you've gone from 30 to 300, and now it's sort of onwards to 3000, I suppose. So nice to have that kind of nice binding point. So great to hear about sort of aspects of your career so far. So let's turn to the present day and indeed what the future might hold. Tegan?
Oh, yeah. So I remember over the pandemic, lots of the people were saying trade shows are dead. We're never going to go back to that way of working. And that's not kind of how it's turned out this year, right? So how have you found the return of trade shows this year?
Very busy.
Yeah.
Actually, my colleagues have joined and participated in several trade shows mm-hmm. and conferences and so on. But I think the most relevant for us was IBC, and I was also there. And being there, you know, I just had the feeling a bit that everybody was overexcited, or a bit of overexcitement overall. Everybody was super enthusiastic to meet again, have face-to-face conversation. There were no masks or very few masks. People were just, you know, really behaving like, okay, we are back to normal. And like you said, during the pandemic, I also had the impression that probably trade shows will become less relevant in the future.
Yeah.
But now after being there again at IBC, I think I was probably wrong. And it's so important to have them for networking, you know, for getting a grasp on what's new in the industry, see new products and technologies. And it's an experience so condensed over a few days. And, you know, it's really like an infusion of the latest and greatest that cannot be replaced by anything virtual.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many webinars we check and news and so on, just being there, it feels different. And during the pandemic, we started new projects, acquired new customers, right? And it was so great to meet some of them at, or most of them at IBC, because everybody came and there were really a few whom we never saw face to face before IBC. And we at RSS also took advantage of the fact that everyone was there and organized actually two events of our own. One was the beach party at IBC premises with a couple of partners. And the other one was the operator community, as we call it. We organized it for the first time face to face, and most of our clients joined. And really, the feedback was very positive because, yeah, it's just simply different. They could share experience and, you know, similar challenges they have. And I think they also found maybe some inspiration on how to solve them. And we tried to replicate this previously in remote events, but was not even close, you know.
It's so funny.
They're not that, from my point of view, and will be just as relevant in the future as they were before pandemic.
I completely agree. I think nothing replaces a handshake. There's something that happens. Zoom is great, right? But there's something that happens when people come together that you just cannot replicate.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
I was a bit worried, you know, seeing so many people. I was like, okay, this is going to be a disaster of spreading after all. But maybe I was just not reading in the news the right things, but didn't seem like that. I mean, also none of my colleagues got sick, and we were quite a few there. So everything was fine.
Oh, I'm delighted. And looking towards the future, which I'm sure will incorporate many more trade shows, I'm really interested to know, how do you decide to partner with a new company versus developing technology in-house? And how do you kind of make that evaluation and work out that balance in your day-to-day job?
So at RSS, we aim to have at any time 10 to 15% of the delivery force external from partners. And we do so for two main reasons. Number one is it happens that sometimes we have peaks in demand, right? Mm-hmm. It happened also last year that we started 4 new projects in 1 month. So that was just a lot to handle. Yeah. And then we'd get technical support and engineers from our partners to really complete or get our teams in the best shape in terms of staffing for starting a new project. And the second reason is for know-how and expertise when we want to kickstart a new technology track, because we are all the time looking what's new, what framework is relevant for smart TVs, for mobile development. And we don't have all the time this in-house, but we look for experts to help us, to help and join us for 6 months, 1 year, probably longer, and help train and work together with our engineers so we build that know-how in-house. And in general, we have long-term collaboration with partners. We were in discussions with really a lot over the years. And I think by now we have 5 to 7 companies really very reliable, and it's a trust relation, and we all the time know that we can get the best technical support from them. But we are also looking and evaluating others on the way for sure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I'm now going to pass back to you, Tim, to talk about our topic that matters.
Yes, so every show we sort of like to pick an area that we think is going to be most relevant to who we're interviewing, and we thought in this case that we would focus on sort of changing behaviour in content consumption, and start off with a question about sort of the automotive space. So kind of content in the automotive space is probably the newest, the most kind of innovative like platform for content since we had the kind of smartphone revolution. So what do you think the impact of this sort of growing content for the automotive market will have on content owners?
A big one, I hope. You know, probably that automotive is a subject which has a lot of attention inside 3SS. We also had our own car, a pollster in front of IBC there. We are really seriously looking into that area as a platform. And I think automotive, right, comes as a new screen, a new ecosystem. And when we talk about ecosystem, I think there are multiple aspects to look at from the content owner's point of view, like you said. First is the distribution channels, right? A lot of the automotive OEMs have their own app stores, and content owners, as a content owner, you need to make sure that you are on the respective store. Just as you are on the TV space or mobile app store, you need to have your app there as a distribution channel. In the car, very often there is more than one OS, right? And usually for the HMI, for the car controls, like seats or air conditioning, there is one, and a different one for the entertainment part. Seems like Android in its different flavor, AOSP, Fire TV, Android Automotive, whatever, will be probably will be established as the main and most relevant one. One challenge I see really for the content owners, it's related with content format from two points of view. First, it needs to be optimized for this new platform because first of data consumption, mobile data is still costly in some of the countries, and you do not have this flat fee like you have to pay for your home, right? It can vary the cost. And even with 5G, when you are in the car on the move, there may be connectivity issues, right? Yeah. And the content format needs to be adapted and optimized to enable still a very good consumer experience in these conditions, right? Considering the cost for mobile data, as well as the format that you need to make it work when you are in the move and the connectivity is not great. And I think automotive is also in a way similar with the mobile phones, because even if you are in the back seat of a car, let's say, right, it's still different compared with your cozy living room. So I think it goes more into the direction of looking like on the mobile phone. And there is noise and there is distraction and movement. And from this point of view, content owners need to consider the attention span of the people in the car, and they tend to watch this, how it's called, bite or snack sized content, right?
Yeah.
Which is in 10, 15 minutes long and, you know, easy to consume.
Yeah.
So I think this would be, yes, definitely something for content owners to consider and adapt the content.
Yeah. And I suppose it's one they've tried to do, I suppose mostly the smartphones, but, you know, trying to compete with people like, you know, UQ YouTube and the people who do that, as you said, that more snackable content, but without doing, you know, I suppose the big example is somebody like Quibi, who are like, hey, we're going to revolutionize it with snackable bite-sized content. Didn't quite work. Not entirely sure what didn't quite connect when it worked on other platforms, but yeah, trying to thread that needle and yeah, get it in the right format without kind of losing the point of what your service was in the first place, which is, yes, I think there's going to be a few approaches and we'll see which ones work.
I'm curious how this is going to be, right? How everything will look like in 2-3 years.
yeah, absolutely. And actually slightly connected to what you were saying earlier with that kind of, you know, the different OSs and cars and sort of the different systems, but maybe a little bit more on the content owner side. I was going to ask about, given that you're a company that provides, you know, these cross-platform ecosystems for content, you'll have encountered, you know, content owners that push for maybe a more of an open content aggregation style platform, and others that are a bit more sort of like a walled garden of content, like a Disney Plus, for example. Of those kind of two approaches, yeah, a little bit more lockdown, a little bit more sort of open and aggregation focus. Do you think that one approach will become ultimately dominant in the kind of either the automotive space more broadly, or do you think it'll end up being a bit of a mix?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, our main customers are the operators, actually. So they, you know, they have the burden of dealing with content owners and so on. But working with them, I'm not sure if my opinion will be very relevant here, but I can give it a try. And my, I think in reality will be a mixture, because while everyone's will want to keep the users in their ecosystems, because, you know, in this way they have all the data, they know best their users and can provide meaningful recommendation and a great experience to keep the users engaged. That would be everybody's wish, but probably even the big ones like Netflix or Disney will have to open up a bit and allow their content on the aggregation platforms, like the operators who don't have their own vote library anymore, how they used to be, but are aggregating content from various streamers. It is, like I said all the time, of course, a question of agreement between content provider and operators or other aggregators, which we don't really face every day, this challenge, because it's not in our yard, so to say. Yeah, it's about this agreement and how they how the content is displayed, on which position, you know, and how much data and insights are shared by the content owners. Because if you don't know the user behavior, and if you don't have the data and you don't understand their preferences, then the recommendations are meaningless and people are not engaged long term. And, you know, in the end, you may lose them as a client. So I think there must be some sort of compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'd agree. And again, it is sort of comes to that, what we were talking about earlier, where there's not a clear answer right now, you know, which approach will work, especially when we're dealing with, you know, say the automotive domain, where the ecosystem is young. We don't have an enormous amount of content consumption behavior data, things like that. It'll take some time to work out. What do people respond to? What actually works for people? Is it the same as the smartphone area? Is it more like home cinema viewing? We won't know for a few years.
Yeah. Well, I think everything will be a bit more clear in a 2-3 years timeline. That's my estimate.
Perfect. And in 2-3 years, we will call you and say, right, now you should know, and we demand answers.
Yeah, let's see.
Perfect. Well, in which case, let's move over to another core topic now, and that's diversity. Tegan.
Oh, thanks, Tim. Amelia, I know that 3SS has an outstandingly brilliant ratio when it comes to gender diversity and inclusion, actually. How do you personally foster an inclusive working environment within 3SS and your teams?
My common sense, I hope.
I love that. Yeah.
Indeed, I think we have quite a healthy ratio at the moment. And I think that's like I said before, because also of our company culture. And we put usually the people, we put the focus on people, right? Because in a competitive market, that it really is a competitive market where there is an extreme demand of IT professionals. I think companies really need to take seriously and consider what they need to do to make sure people stay within the company and are happy and motivated and really, you know, they have this desire to make an impact and contribute to the company growth and innovation and so on. And our HR team is very busy, to be honest, with all kinds of activities to make sure we put the right focus on people. We have anonymous surveys, engagement survey every quarter, where we measure the employee happiness using the NPS score. We want to find out all the time, what else do we need to do to make their work life better? What would they like to see at workplace? What the company can do for them so they can perform better and they are more happy at work. Mm-hmm. And then I think we invest a lot into all kinds of events. So team of all kinds, you know, being a project team or just a team, how we call it, a circle, working together on a certain topic, they get to spend time together because we have quite a distributed company. So we bring people together to work for a week or two. We have department events, for a weekend, they just go and have fun to bond and create this connection that you feel that, you know, your workplace is a bit more than just going there from 9 to 5 and doing your job, right?
Yeah.
And we also organized more before the pandemic, but we try now to go back to that, hackathons to enable innovation and that people feel that their ideas, you know, they can get to be alive and implemented within the company. And at these hackathons, we implement and work on the ideas brought by the people. Then we have, I don't know, board game evenings, sport events and competition and, you know, all kinds of stuff, really.
It's about creating community, right?
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of events where we actually invite also the families and the kids and the Halloween and really a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. I think it's funny, isn't it? When you create a workplace that is inclusive, it's not just minorities that then enjoy work more and enjoy having a great time, and work is more than just work. Everyone benefits, right?
Exactly, yes. But I think in the end, it's all comes down to really being tolerant and understanding with everybody's needs and life priorities, right? Because I think when people feel that there is a balance between life, personal life and work, and they feel appreciated at work, then I think, you know, they also perform better and they stay longer within the company. And, you know, the most expensive employees are those who leave. So
yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I'm really interested to know your thoughts as well. How do you think the industry can encourage more women specifically into senior leadership roles?
Oh, that's a tricky question.
Yes.
I don't know what to say exactly. I have some ideas. I think first of all, it starts with a company demonstrating all along, you know, a commitment to give equal chances to men and women, regardless of position, first of all, or seniority. And I think a lot of companies do that in the meantime. So I think we are on the right track. And because I think in technology, the workforce has at the moment a healthy ratio, I would say, at least at the junior mid-level. And it's definitely on the right track. But things look slightly different when it comes to executive roles. Mm-hmm. Promoting and encouraging women right in these roles is, I think, not a one-time campaign, but it shall really be a key component in the company policy and culture, and most importantly, lived day by day in through actions. From, you know, acknowledging the skills and expertise and maybe making an extra effort to celebrate the female success, right, and providing the mentorship and support for them. probably, you know, by having more of female role models in senior position will also increase long term the number of women joining the industry. And now, from my personal point of view and experience, when it comes to these day-to-day activities a company can do, I have two children, you also mentioned in the beginning. And one important thing from the beginning to, you know, to this day for me is the schedule flexibilities. Because when you have small children, you face situation which cannot be planned in advance or, you know, and then your schedule simply needs a higher level of flexibility. I don't know, the kids get sick or they need to be picked up on short notice from kindergarten or school and all kinds of stuff. And then it's so important to have the possibility to juggle with your work schedule a bit. And also related with this schedule, I think it's very important that companies adopt a culture where the focus is on performance and outcome and not so much on how many hours I tracked at work this day, right? Because again, like being in a high level position and having so many responsibilities and the kids as well, then it's so difficult, almost impossible to compete with somebody who doesn't, right? To work late hours or how many weekends are you available to work? And you need to consider that for mothers, and sometimes most of the time, this is really difficult to handle the work time and all these expectations, sometimes with the family responsibility and wishes and life priorities in general. And in that respect, also, I think childcare and family in general shall not be seen only as a woman task, right? Because in general, it's for both parents relevant. And probably when more companies would offer equal maternity and paternity leave, this will allow parents both to make a personalized decision for their family and their situation. And this will encourage women maybe to return faster and easier back at work after childbirth. So really it's again about tolerance and understanding towards the situation of each of us, and especially for mothers.
I couldn't agree more. And I love that bit that you said, don't judge me on the hours I work, judge me by what I achieve. Exactly. Leave the flexibility in what I'm doing at 3 o'clock, leave that to me, but judge me on what I produce for you. Oh, I couldn't agree more. I could ask you so many more questions about this, but I've got an eye on the clock. So Tim, I'm going to pass over to you.
Yes, so let's bring it back to you and let our listeners know a little bit more about sort of your life outside work. And from our conversation so far, we've already heard, you know, the importance of the family to you, and you know how, and I think we're talking before the podcast about sort of how home can often be quite the kind of happy place to come back to. But if you're going away, where would your perfect holiday destination be?
Destination, right? So I would like to go back to Bali. Asia is something I always, you know, I'm always open for that. And I was once a very long time ago, and I would definitely return back, even if, you know, I all the time try to go in new places, but Bali is on top of the list.
And what made it so kind of special for you, and somewhere you want to go back again?
I think, again, the people, and in general, it's a place which, you know, gives you multiple opportunities to do and activities to do in holiday. So I all the time like to have some, you know, active things like hiking or, you know, going, just being in nature and doing some being active. And then also, you know, in the end, the last 3 or 4 days just to relax at the beach. And I think that's from that point of view, it's a great destination. The food is awesome. People are nice. And in general, is a very positive vibe place, I would say.
Yeah, and as you say, somewhere where, you know, it has that unique position somewhere. It's like, would you like a tropical tropical beach resort holiday? Also, would you like to climb a mountain? Well, guess what? They're right next to each other. Welcome to
exactly,
Bali.
Exactly.
Yes, well, places. Lovely, lovely. It's nice to kind of get a bit more of insight. You know, obviously we talked a lot about work. It's nice to sort of hear a bit more about sort of you and what you like. So I'll kind of pass over to Tegan for our final question now.
Our final question, Amelia, is always the same, and that is, what one piece of advice would you give to somebody entering the industry?
Can I have multiple?
For you, of course.
Okay, I will try to be short. I think I would tell them, you know, just find your voice and use it. Be bold, express your ideas, and don't be shy. Young people, right, I think they have a lot of insights and can bring a lot of value in this industry because they understand consumer behavior, media distribution, and that's a very valuable resource, which we probably don't use enough, right? But in the same time, I think I see a lot of people joining also 3SS, young people, and I feel they could use a bit more patience and resilience in a way, right? Because this new generation, they want it all, you know, money, position, everything in no time. But when they are faced with one problem or a difficult situation, then they tend to give up. And, you know, I'm just searching for a new job. I want to try a new position. And I think they need to be a bit more resilient and patient because a career is not built in 1 year, right? So it's maybe contradictory what I just said, but I think both are would be important for new joiners, especially, like I said, new young people.
And I utterly agree with you about resilience is so, so important, and that ability to really dig deep, keep going, know that Rome wasn't built in a day, and to trust your team around you is vital.
Yeah, I mean, I love the ambition, right? And I love to see them so motivated, but I think it's really important to invest in yourself. And when I say invest, it's about, you know, taking time and putting some effort in to become better, to learn new things, to really study some stuff, because it's just an experience you need to build up. And like you said, Rome was not built in one day. So
I get it. Oh, Amelia, I literally could double the length of this podcast time. It's been such a delight having you on, and thank you so much for your time and sharing all of your insights and wisdom. It's been a real pleasure. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And talk to you in 2 or 3 years, right? To see
how I'm coming for the updates. I will have
exactly,
my updates.
Automotive space updates in 3 years.
We'll hold you to that. Thanks, Amelia. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com.